And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So the big news, lads, coming from this week is that Michael Ryan's media ban has been lifted. So he talked to Tip FM on the Monday, and it was a misjudged thing. We talked, maybe it was the Tuesday morning he talked to Tip FM. We were speaking about it on the Monday, and we were saying what a, you know, it wasn't the greatest thing to do after a loss, because obviously that's all people are going to talk to. It's going to make it look like you're a sore loser. So I don't know, Cheddar, what do you think of this? Damien is on the line as well. I'll go to you, Cheddar, first.
I'll preface what I'm going to say here by saying that, you know, any critical analysis about the game, or particularly the game on last Sunday, is entirely fair, you know, in terms of the way the team set up or the way the game's played and all of that. But I think people need to reflect on you know, who they were commenting on here. Michael Ryan was a Tip warrior in his playing days. In my time looking at him, never took a backward step. And, you know, he was obviously deeply disappointed after the game last Sunday, particularly in the way which had a Tip hurled, and maybe the lack of hunger and desire, although that's not the problem, I think, with the Tip team, but that's what would have been seen. And I think Michael Ryan has always been very, very open with the media, very courteous to everybody, and a very articulate man in all media articles. And I'd also have to say myself that Michael Ryan has always been very, very courteous to ourselves, or would say some counties that just may not have the high profile a Tip have. And he would be hugely respected among hurling people. And I was very disappointed with a lot of the articles. There was one article in particular in a major newspaper last Monday that I was very, very disappointed from a respected journalist about the commentary on Michael Ryan. And I'm not talking about the hurling or anything like that. I'm just talking about that he didn't speak to the media after the game. I probably would have expected a little bit more. To be honest with you, it was a nothing short of character assassination as far as I was concerned. And I'd probably say also that I was particularly disappointed with a lot of Tip people that they didn't defend him, to defend Michael a little bit more at that particular time. You know, he's an amateur sportsman at the end of the day. You know, took a big dig last Sunday from, you know, not his team not playing well and that, and particularly not in the style that he would have been noted for himself. And I think a lot of Tipperary people should have thought first about what Michael Ryan has done for Tipperary, both as a player, as a selector and a manager. And I can say with certainty he's never ever turned his back on the Tipperary jersey, and I thought he deserved a little bit more unequivocal support from Tip people in particular, but from hurling people also after last Sunday's defeat. And again, I'm just going to finish, I suppose, in that comment in the way I've started. That's not saying that and, you know, people cannot comment on critical analysis of the game, the way the team was set up, how they played, and all of these things. I think that's all fair game for comment. Every manager respects that. But I think when it gets into sort of personal stuff about why he didn't speak to the media and what he should do and speak to the media and all of that, considering where he had been after that game, I think it was a little bit, it was uncalled for, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. And okay, I take that point, and I do take the point that the media gets a little bit precious with this kind of stuff. And if a manager doesn't want to talk, I don't think a manager's doing himself any favours by not talking, because then all the commentary is about why he didn't talk, instead of, you see a lot of managers that they just come out and they say feck all anyway. So, like, I mean, that might have been the advice, Michael Ryan.
But well, I would just come in there, Willie, like that. I mean, that's the real point I'm trying to make here. Michael Ryan has never not spoken to the media, and he's always been very articulate and courteous to them. And I think he should have been shown a little bit more respect in a tough time for him after a game like that, that people would understand, and would understand that the comments that they made about him, particularly in terms of the dynamic in the dressing room between a manager and the team, could be quite hurtful. And I think if Michael Ryan was the type of person that picked and chose the times he spoke, or went into some of these articles and actually said nothing, really just said the bland line the whole time, fine, you know, maybe I might accept that. But this is not the character of the man that I've seen over the last couple of years, and I thought he should have been treated with a little bit more respect than what he was showing.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt he's a gentleman. Damien, he actually said on Tip FM that the decision was made before the Limerick game, that the games were coming so thick and heavy, and we know Tip have four games in a row, that he said that the decision was made before the Limerick game, that they weren't going to do media until the end of the four league games. So he's trying to paint a picture that it wasn't just because they lost that game, that decision was already made. Again, that's his own prerogative if that's what he wants to do. It's just, I guess he went on Tip FM because of the fallout from not speaking.
Yeah, it's a kind of a funny point to make that they weren't going to do any media until the whole round robin was going to be done, because they're always going to be expected to do media column. And it's, I suppose, it's part and parcel of the whole management thing, you know. You have to do the media interviews, and even though you mightn't want to do them, you know, they have to be done, you know. And what I would always say is, if it's a thing that you don't want to do the interview because you're so upset over losing a match, or you're absolutely livid, maybe send out one of your selectors, you know, just to do the media and get it over and done with, and just say that, you know, Michael is talking to the players inside or whatever, you know. I would agree there with Cheddar. I think some of the media journalists, I went a little bit overboard. Like, he didn't do anything majorly wrong, he just didn't speak to the media, you know, and it's class. But I'd say the main reason why he didn't speak to the media was, I'd say Mick Ryan was so disappointed and so disheartened with the way Tipperary played that I genuinely reckon that he felt himself that he could say something very wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, if he was being interviewed by someone, we'll say, in the media, right, whether it be newspapers or television, and they press them hard and press these buttons, and you know, that he might say something that he would regret. And that's what I think it is. Now, I've no doubt about it, in reflection, with, you know, a day or two afterwards, he was sorry that he didn't do the media, and he needed to get his thoughts and his wits together. And that's why he possibly did go on Tip FM to apologise and say that he should have did it and all that sort of stuff. But I just reckon that he was so disappointed and so disheartened with his Tipperary performance. You know, it's okay to lose a game, Colm, in this round robin, as we know, right? But it was the manner that they lost. Oh my God, like, there was no heart, there was no determination. Like, the only time I reckon that the Tipperary crowd roared and shouted, where they looked like the tempo was after being upped, was in the 50th minute when Brendan Maher came on the pitch, and within about 20 seconds Jason Ford got a goal. But apart from that, there wasn't an awful lot more to be roared about. And as I said to the other day, Limerick potentially could have hammered Tipperary.
Yeah. So maybe it's his honest, maybe it's the fact that he is honest and he wears his heart in his sleeve, that he just didn't want to go out and do it. And look, that has to be accepted as well. But I do think that the criticism of potentially the team he picked and things like that, that's fair enough. Like, I mean, that's fair comment. But one person I wanted to discuss here with you lads is Brendan Cummins, because he's very close to Michael Ryan and he's very close to Tipperary, and he's writing in the Independent during the week, and he's saying there's a growing disconnect between the team and supporters. Now, he criticised Ryan for not explaining his decisions and doing the media afterwards, then goes on to pick his own Tipperary team. Like, I mean, I know Brendan Cummins. Brendan Cummins used to collect me to go to international rules trials in 1998. He looked after me back then, so I always have good time for Brendan Cummins. He looked out for me when I was only a young fella. But that's not helpful, to have Brendan Cummins, a Tipperary legend, saying in the newspaper that there's a growing disconnect. This is undermining Michael Ryan a little bit, Cheddar, is it?
First of all, I read the article, sorry, and I thought it was very disrespectful. That's the first thing, right? And I thought him even naming his Tipperary team, I thought that was even twice as much disrespectful. I thought he hurled with Mick Ryan, and he hurled under Mick Ryan when Mick Ryan was a selector. And to come out and say that, all that's doing is adding pressure to Mick Ryan. So now, all I can say to you is, I've hurled under Galway management teams, right? And, like, for example, if Conor Hayes, just to give an example of a county manager, was manager of Galway, and he picked the wrong team, and someone came out and asked me what team would I pick, I would possibly pass it by and go, it's irrelevant to the team that I'd want to pick, because I'd have huge respect for Conor Hayes, right? And I'd say, you know, we need to back the man, and I get behind him and do your best for your county. But I thought it was very, very interesting comments saying about his media responsibilities, and then to say about picking the team. Like, I just thought it was maybe Brendan Maher's interest, or sorry, Brendan Cummins' interest in becoming the next Tipperary manager.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it was all about.
That could be it.
Well, you don't know that, Colm, and neither do I, right? Yeah. But I just thought it was very strange why he would pick the Tipperary team. And frankly, I thought it was quite cheeky. That's being honest, and I'm just going to defend Michael Ryan there. I thought it was very, very cheeky with the way he came out in the article. It never once suggested that he'd back Ryan on his team selection or back him. He was his friend, his player colleague, and played under him. Didn't do a lot for him now, I don't think, myself.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one, Cheddar. And you look at it, Brendan Cummins is involved in coaching now, and he's with the Kerry Hurlers, and maybe he has a view of getting that Tipperary job? It's a very, very attractive job.
Look, I'd have to say, first of all, I know Brendan very well. Brendan was a coach with me in Laois, and he's normally a very level-headed person, and you know, certainly has county manager
credentials
certainly in the future, and certainly for Tipperary as well. I think, though, you know, we got to speak honestly about this as well, and I think the article was unhelpful. And I think, you know, some of the comments that Brendan made, unless you actually know what's going on inside in the dressing room and on the training field, if you do, maybe you can comment, but if you don't, you cannot. And you know, there was a number of senior players, I suppose, in Tipperary that weren't picked last Sunday, but you know, if they were injured, you cannot pick them. I don't care if they're 4 or 5 All-Ireland medals or 24 or 25 All-Ireland medals. If they're not, if they're injured or if they're not showing current form, you cannot pick them. And it's very, very easy in an article just to say, you know, because somebody has played really, really well in the past, that they should have been playing in that.
It's playing to supporters as well, Cheddar, because that was what every Tipperary supporter was probably saying after the game. Where's Brendan Maher? Where's Seamus Callanan? So Brendan, to some extent, is playing to the gallery there a little bit.
Well, look, there's an interesting comparison here. You look at Kenny against Dublin. Brian Cody went with the players that got him and won him a league final. And against Dublin, he had to bring back the 3 or 4 really, you know, serious players to go win the match for him. But actually, Kilkenny won the game by a point. Now, if Tipperary had won the game by a point last Sunday, people would have been saying this was a masterstroke. You've blooded a lot of young players. You've given an opportunity to play with Tipperary. You've put pressure now on seasoned players to up their game to come back. But just because they lost the game, now Michael has been vilified for that. So I think it's an interesting comparison to look at you know, how Brian Cody was applauded for handling Kilkenny in the round one of the Leinster Championship. Of course, they won the match, and that's the difference. But Michael was treated very, very differently.
Yeah, they're a funny enough county, Tipperary. Like, I mean, remember Paddy O'Shea called Kerry supporters animals one time, and he got an awful doing for it because the fallout in Kerry is severe with a loss. But Tipperary for hurling seems to be on that same level. Like, I mean,
they are absolutely ravenous for success. And you know, I was very, very lucky to have coached down in Tip, and I was actually surprised at that myself. That you know, I actually thought that our own county were sort of market leaders for this, until I heard some of the stuff that would have been said there. Look, a little bit of that, I suppose, is over the last couple of years. You know, Tip have obviously offered a lot, and their history is massive, you know, absolutely massive. And, you know, a lot of people are sort of looking at that and just don't understand how difficult it is to prepare a team to win, you know, big championships now, or at any time, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, or just find that then you have a sort of knee-jerk reaction to something like this. I think it's mostly that. But there is, I actually found that in Tipperary, that particularly when they needed everybody to circle the wagons, and Tipperary people needed to circle the wagons last Monday morning, and particularly behind a true Tip warrior, Michael Ryan, and it didn't really happen.
Yeah, just to finish up on Tipperary here, Damien, Nicky English was saying in the papers during the week as well, typically it takes Tipperary a little while to recover after a defeat, and it's no wonder when the whole county is losing their minds. So, like, I mean, a 7-day turnaround for Tipperary now in this Munster League is absolutely not ideal, considering this fallout and this distraction.
Yeah, well, it's going to be tough on them, so it is, but there's going to be a lot of soul searching this week, Colin, for the Tipperary players. So there was, and the big thing that Michael Ryan will be looking for from this Tipperary team will be a reaction, and that is the big thing. So is, and it's possibly a great thing for them that they're playing in Turles next Sunday against massive rivalry for them in Munster, which is Cork, like this. And I would be expecting a massive performance from Tipperary the weekend. I think that they need it. That's number one. This is their most important game. If they lose this game against Cork, they're then scraping for third position, right? And then the real pressure will come on this Tipperary team and the management. So, well, as you said, it was interesting what Nicky English said, but I bet you he didn't say anything wrong either in regarding the management team. And just going back on Brendan Cummins, I was just disappointed in him, you know, and with the way he went on with naming the team, I just thought it was bad form. But I will say one thing, I expect a massive reaction from Tipperary this weekend. I expect Tipperary actually to win in Turles next weekend. I would say, it's easy talk now, but I nearly feel sorry. When it's all over, maybe I'll eat my words, but Cork could be on for an onslaught. I expect this Tipperary team to put in a massive shift. Danita, they've their own reputations on the line, some of these players and the management team, and I reckon they'll all row in together and they will put in an almighty performance next Sunday, and they'll put the media talking again in a more positive spin.
Yeah, okay, right, well, we get on to that there when we go to predictions, because it's the Kilkenny-Galway game and the Waterford-Clare game I want to concentrate on in part two. Just one or two other things here, lads, and as Dermot Burns was interviewed after the Tip game, and he was talking about the wides. So Limerick had 13 wides, and that was a feature of their league semi-final against Tip as well, and he says it's something to work on, but we'd always look on the positive side. We're creating chances. It's all about composure and getting that score. I'm just wondering, when, like, I often hear this from players and managers, it's something that we'll work on, and the one always jumps out at me is we worked on getting a good start. And I always think, what team? I've never been on a team that didn't want to get a good start. Like, what does working on a good start mean, and what does working on shooting at the goals mean? Because surely every team practices shooting in training, Cheddar. Like, I mean, you know, when you say we're working on this, is that just kind of guff talk? You know, that it's just thrown out there, rather than, you'd imagine, what can Limerick work on that they haven't already been working on, if you know what I mean?
You talk about it maybe. Yeah, no, you would expect it to work on this. But look, these are some of the things that you would work on. Are we getting our players into the best positions for scoring? So what's the position we're taking our shots from? And are we getting our best score getters on the ball at the right time? And, you know, you look back a little bit further into that as well, in terms of the decision making of players and you know, shot efficiency and all of those. They're all the things that would be worked at. But even just take a step back from that. Is our distribution out of the defence the way we wanted, that suits our forwards? Of course you've been doing that thing all back February, March, April and leading into the championship, but you might just hone a little bit more on that. Bear in mind, you're not going to be doing an awful lot of work in the next couple of weeks, and you need to figure out the two or three things that's going to give you your best performance improvement in the next game, without overloading things. You overload players this week and the next week and you're going to get flat performances. So the management, it's really, really important, I think, of management to identify the things. And if that's some of the things that Limerick identified, and if they only scored another 3 points, I mean, that 3 point margin could win an awful lot of games for them, you know. So these are, you need to identify the really important things and try and fix them. And there's probably a number of things that you need to look at fixing them. It's not just necessarily knowing where the goals are and shooting the shots, because most players at this level will score. It's what position are they taking the shot in? Are they being covered? Is the right man on the ball? Is the ball, the quality of the ball that's going into the person, the right type of ball that he's looking for, and that he should be efficient with, and that. So they're the sort of things that I would be suspecting that, you know, Limerick will just. And you're just looking at eking out little percentages in all your games, and you might get 10 small things might give you a difference of 3 or 4 points, and that's enough to get you over the line.
Yeah, okay. So Damien, I suppose working on things, see, obviously when I hear working on things, I'm thinking of working things on the pitch, actually, you know, physically shooting at the goals, whereas working on things obviously means talking about them, having meetings about them, and actually getting to the root of why that's happening.
Yeah, well, you'll always have meetings and all the players' meetings, Colin, you'll always have forwards' meetings and all that. But at the end of the day, if you want to sharpen up in your shooting and sharpen up on your striking and all that, you just have to go back to brass tacks and get out onto the field, get 10, 12 balls, get a young lad with you, your brother, whoever, and hit the ball over the bar. Simple as that. And what happens is winning brings confidence, Colin. Winning brings confidence. And you're on about, you know, we'll improve our scoring as you go down. Lads will improve their cycle. Lads will improve their position. Lads will improve their striking rate, and they'll get more sharper, and the scoring will come. And, you know, I kind of agree with Burns there. You know, they're getting the shots on target like this. So maybe the likes of Limerick will just improve a lot more of their shooting and doing a lot more shooting practice and a lot more, you know, shooting exercise and all that. But, like, that's all it's down to. You can't overcomplicate this. Like, I've often told the story about 2 years ago, give or take, or 3 years ago, myself and my wife and Anna, our lad, we went to Kerry on holidays with it, and I was mad to see Kerry playing, doing a training session. And we were in Killarney, and I heard that the Kerry team were training, so I went down to the pitch and the gates were locked. That was fine. It was the weekend, if you can remember, Jimber, Cork and Kerry drew a Munster final. Kerry got a pint the very last second to draw it.
Yeah.
But anyways,
Fitzgerald,
yeah. Yeah. So when we came back in, I was the gate slightly left open. So then the three of us going in, and there was about 10 minutes of training left of the Kerry football training like this. And all they were doing was kicking the ball to each other 15, 20 yards to each other, and then foot passes straight into the chest. And next thing, for the last 10 minutes, the backs went in behind the goals and all the forwards started taking shots over the back. And it was so simple as that. And sometimes, Colm, you can overcomplicate the whole thing. The ball to hand, solo, strike it over the bat, and the more complicated you can make things, so the simpler the drill, but all that will come. But just to give the footballers a bit of a dig there now, Colm, as well, right? You were saying, how do you improve kick or score? And surely it's just doing shooting practice and all that sort of stuff. But I often ask the question, Colm, in football, there's certain players that get balls in front of the goals or to the left of the goals, the side goal, and they just won't kick the ball over the bar. They hand pass and hand pass and hand pass and hand pass back and hand pass it, and they're afraid to kick. So just on the football, why don't the footballer kick the ball over the bar when they get an opportunity and space to kick it, or they're not allowed to kick it? You might be able to answer that
You might be able to answer it. You're the one down watching football training sessions down in Kerry. This is a hurling podcast.
Yeah, but would you agree? I know, but would you agree some footballers don't kick the ball over the bar?
No. No, they don't. They try to recycle it, and that's true. And I'd even say why I love that, kicking it over the bar and in training, and I think there's a time in training to have the backs in behind and the forwards kicking it, because there's a nice relaxed vibe and you can have a bit of a competition with the forwards and have a bit of crack. And I think there should be room in a training session for that somewhere. But I still think it's not a match situation though. Because I can kick pints in that scenario, but if I'm in a full forward line and I'm going out to collect the ball and I have to turn and shoot on the turn, that kind of kicking over the bar is a waste of time for me in that scenario, you know. So unless you're bringing match situations in it and helping forwards, and it's decision making a lot of the time on when you shoot, and it's even maybe what I always found with managers and coaches down through the years is when I would have played wing back, wing forward a lot, when I went in full forward, my shooting on the turn was bad. I was never coached as to why it was bad, and maybe I was snatching at them, maybe I was kicking before I was properly turned, maybe, you know, there's probably plenty of reasons for it, but I had no experience doing it, and I don't think I was coached at all, Cheddar. You'd be surprised how little coaching goes on at intercounty level, because managers think you should know this already, and often, especially if you move positions, you're hungry for information.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think even down to, and I agree with Damien, by the way, as well. I think, Damien, you're spot on. I think sometimes you can overcomplicate things and confuse things, and that's even worse. But I think, you know, even in the coaching up along, and this is where I think, you know, I'd love to see hurling coaching going to. You know, you need to look at the footwork. You know, Colm, you brought up an example there of on the turn. You know, what's your footwork on the turn, and then what's your strike, and, you know, what's your follow through and hurling and all of that. And in fairness, I think senior coaches should expect that you have a lot of those things in your arsenal when you come to be a senior player.
Yeah.
But I do take her point. More often than not, they don't. And I think what's really important here, though, is the point you're making, that good coaches spot problems and spot issues and have the ability to fix them. And I think that's the really, really important part. And I think just going back as the last comment on Limerick, if they're missing some scores that, you know, at this level should be scored, and 13 points is, you know, 13 wides is a lot. Of course, it's great to have a high percentage of possession, but if you're wasting possession in good scoring areas, that's not good either. But, you know, good coach and figuring out why this is happening and fixing it would be really, really important.
Yeah, it would. Damien, would you have been coached? Because you moved around the field just as much as I did.
I'll tell you straight out how simple it was with me, right? And I was a very simple player, right? I used to live in the wall ball, right? And I used to live in the ball alleys, and I used to live off the gable into the house, right? And there was a day when I was playing for Galway that I had an hole in my hand striking balls, and I spent half an hour striking left and right and hand passing and bouncing the ball off the wall and catching on the hop. But then when I went down shooting, right, and I could bring when my younger brothers with me or a friend or whoever, when I used to go shooting balls over the bar, which might say was very simple, I'd have 10 slippers with me and I'd be shooting 20 points in each corner of the forward line. So if I was playing number 15 corner, I would shoot 10 points going in, and then I would shoot 10 points going out. So you're speaking of getting the ball and on the turn.
Yeah.
I would shoot. Then when I'd have them with them 10 points shot over there, I'd go and I'd move into number 14 position, and whoever was hitting the ball into me would hit the ball into me from out the field. I'd come out with my controller. I would pretend it was a match situation. I would jinx left, do all that sort of stuff, jinx right, and throw it over there. right? Then I would work on it from the other angle. So it was very simple. It was just, you know, and I think that there's too much time spent in gyms and all that sort of stuff, right? I would then move into the number 13 corner and I would do the exact same thing where I'd be striking off at left and right and at practicing it, right? And that's how simple it was for me, right? Now, your work rate is a different story. You have to work on that. But when it comes to striking and shooting balls over the bar, there's no better way to do it than just get the balls and strike them over the bar and try... be precise on your angles and improve your angles and improve your feet and your acceleration when you need to strike it and all that. And the more balls you strike, Colin, the better your striking will become. As simple as that. And like the ball alley, what did they say? I think Justin McCarthy said it on his book. He wrote a book called Hooked. He goes, the ball alley to the hurler is the fairway to the golfer. It doesn't lie. It's as simple as that. If you're striking a ball off your left-hand side in the body and it comes straight back to your hand and then you move to your right-hand side and you strike and it goes to your feet, you notice you have an issue with your right-hand side. And you start practicing that. It's ball to hand, hand to wall, and all the way back into your hand again. And it's as simple as that. Fitness, different. Strength and exercise, different. When it comes to hurling, when it comes to ball work, when it comes to shooting, don't complicate it. Just stick to the simple basics.
I think that's probably great advice, Cheddar, and I think for hurling especially, which is a much more skillful game, despite what some football supporters might think, hurling is a much more difficult game to play, and going into the gym at the expense of the handball it might be counterproductive. So how do you maybe get that balance, because you need the strength and conditioning too? Like there's a lot to keep your eye in with hurling.
There's certainly a lot in what Damien is saying here. Like, there's no doubt about it, but the ball wall is a fantastic place for spotting figs, either for you individually or even with you with your coach. But I think what Damien is referring to really is individual skill of forwards. I think sort of what I'm looking for is maybe making a little bit easier that the shot's going to be successful. And you know, you got to look at the distribution into the forward's position, the position of the players around them, and all of that. And absolutely, of course, you're going to need the individual technical skill of the forward. But I think at senior level, and it's because of what Damien says, you know, forwards at senior inter-county level practice more time on their own than they would with their county, and that's a fair bit. And I do take the point as well that, you know, there's a little bit of overemphasis on strength and conditioning, and you've only a certain amount of time in the week to give to this. But I certainly would stick to that for underage. I think, you know, the emphasis on strength and conditioning in underage really needs to be looked at, how it's fed in, how you measure it, and all of that. And it's certainly taken a little bit away from the minute from the basic skills of the game, and I think that's wrong.
Yeah, okay, I think we'd all agree on that one. Two other quick ones, lads, before we get into the matches, is Maurice Shanahan is eligible to play this weekend. Did you know about this? Because he was sent off in his last game against Cork. It was a straight red, and you would imagine Maurice wouldn't be eligible, but he is. And this is just another little kind of GEA rule that might make you scratch your head. So Shanahan sending off against Cork occurred in a relegation playoff, so he was handed a 2-week ban and not a match-based penalty. Match-based suspensions in operation for the National League and Championship are not applicable to games such as promotion or relegation playoffs tournaments. So if you play a relegation playoff, there's a different rule for the suspension as there is for like the normal National League. So like Maurice Shanahan, we remember him, he wasn't on the field a minute, so maybe Maurice knew the rules better than everybody else, so he's free for the game at the weekend. But it's kind of unique, the GAA, Cheddar, is with little things like this, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I just read that article actually, and look, as all I'd say, I must have scratched my head a lot of times to do with some rules that's in the GAA. And look, it's that sort of lack of consistency across application of rules and all of that we always rail against. First of all, I'm delighted that Maurice Shanahan is playing, both for himself and just for hurling followers, and he's a brilliant player. But you'd probably say, look, this is just another instance of just sort of inconsistency across application of different bits and pieces. I think somebody else was saying about if somebody loses out in the Leinster Championship, they have a potential to go down to Joe McDonagh, but that may not happen in Munster, and it's another bite of the cherry. Like, why do these things start to come into it? Why doesn't common sense prevail across these things?
Yeah, exactly. And just mentioning that there, Matthew O'Hanlon was talking during the week, and he was given out about that very thing, and we were not going to get into that because we've all kind of agreed that that's just kind of no consistency consistency there. But he's saying, it's basically saying Munster hurling are these aristocrats and are looking down on Leinster. Because why would the fifth place team in Munster get relegated if the fifth place team in Leinster does not? And, like, I mean, I've talked to you about this before, and, like, I think everyone in Leinster has a chip on the shoulder about how Munster views themselves and this brilliant championship that they have. But having said that, before I go any further, go on, Cheddar, you're going to say something.
Well, anyway, I would agree with you on that, but I'd say in this instance it's more that the Leinster Council people fell asleep at the wheel when this thing was being put together and that, and that just didn't see the impact of this. Obviously somebody in Munster was sharp, and somebody in one of those five counties, or maybe all five, got together. I don't know.
I think this was Duffy's proposal, though. I think this is unless Leinster just were asleep and okayed it rather than actually kind of voted it down maybe or something like that, and be surprised. But here's one for you, Damien, that the Munster Championship is this big thing, and Conal had a chip on his shoulder, you have one, Michael Carton has one, Cheddar has one. You all think that Leinster hurling is the poor relation of Munster, and that's not always the case. But having said that, attendance at Cork Clare at the weekend was 25,000, Limerick Tip was 20,000, and both of those attendances were double Wexford Dublin, which was only 10, which is a very disappointing crowd considering the kind of fanatical support Wexford have, and Kilkenny Offaly was 17. So while Leinster might cry and moan about how Munster hurling is seen, it's still better supported.
I would agree with you there, Con. It's definitely better supported. The way I would look at Leinster hurling and Munster hurling is, I think Leinster hurling is tougher. It's a tougher brand of hurling. I mean that, and I think the Munster hurling is more technical and more skillful. And I don't mean that being disrespectful to anyone. It's just some hurling counties are more physical and tougher and all that. And I think that's the way Leinster hurling is. I think Munster hurling is a lot more skillful and a lot more faster and pacey hurlers. Do I have an issue with Munster hurling? Not Munster hurling, not one bit. I really enjoy it, actually. I love to see a good game of hurling down in Munster, and the Munster finals are a huge day on the calendar, and no more than Leinster. Yeah, right. But Munster hurling has tipped Leinster hurling over the last couple of years, because, to be honest, with the emergence of Wexford maybe last year, it was always Kilkenny versus Galway. So it was, and that's no disrespect to any other counties, but Munster hurling was a better championship to watch. There was a lot more teams in it. There was more teams competing to win the Munster championship, and I've no issue with that. Colin, Munster hurling has a lot more crowds and all that, but it's a different brand of hurling. But there's a lot more teams competing to win. So if Munster hurling is a better championship than the Leinster championship, so be it. I have no issue with it.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't have included you in there on that. What do you think, Cheddar?
Look, I've nailed my colours to mast on this before.
do you think Damien's point that it's a different brand of hurling?
Every county is a different style of hurling. It's not necessarily Munster versus Leinster. I mean, you could certainly make a case for the style of hurling for probably every county. I just like, I'm luckily enough, I'm a little bit older than Damien here, because I can certainly remember way back to the 70s and maybe late 60s and right throughout the 80s. And there was Kilkenny and Wexford Leinster finals that were drawing bigger crowds than Munster finals, and were far better games, more competitive, more physical, and technically more brilliant than Munster. And I'd make one other point as well. If Kilkenny weren't as dominant as they were for the last 20 years in Leinster, and as such dominating and to an extent, I suppose, stifling the development of hurling in a lot of other counties, and I'm talking to Wexford and to Dublin in particular here, would they have had the opportunity to develop a little bit more and, make a bigger mark at All-Ireland Championship Series? I probably think they would. And my last point on that is, look, at the end of the day, Brian Cody makes a very, very simple and a very, very valid statement here, that best team always wins. And if Munster hurling was such a brilliant championship and all of that, it would improve the counties in Munster to such an extent that they'd be winning an awful lot of All-Irelands, and that hasn't happened. So look, there's a lot of pros and cons for this. A lot of the time we just hop the ball here and have a bit of fun about it and a bit of crack about it and all of that, but sometimes it's no harm to look at the real statistics here and do the statistics back this up. I don't think they do over the last 30 or 40 years, and as I say, maybe we're lucky that we have Kilkenny in Leinster to be able to prove our point here, but on the other side of that, if Kilkenny weren't there, would the likes of Wexford and Dublin and Offaly and so on have developed their game to such an extent that they're you know, they're ready to compete with anybody?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, and definitely we see that in Leinster now. The dominance of Dublin in the football has knocked off Kildare and Meath, and these, it's almost disillusioned them to the point where Leinster hurling is only starting to recover probably now from that Kilkenny dominance. Right, lads, we've gone way over time on the top of the show. We'll have a look at the games next.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. But fucking bullshit, if you see yourselves.
The big one of the weekend, I don't think there's any doubt about this, lads, is Galway and Kilkenny, and that's in Pearse Stadium at 4 o'clock, and it's on RTE. And like, this is a huge game, and I was just looking at this and I didn't realise Galway haven't played Kilkenny in the championship since 2016, when they were beaten in the Leinster final by them. It was 126 to 22 points. Kilkenny beat them in the All-Ireland final, we know that, in 2015. They beat them in the Leinster final in 2015. The All-Ireland final in 2015 was that game where Galway fell apart in the second half. And then, obviously, in 2016, they followed that up with Kilkenny dominating them in a Leinster final. So this new Galway team under Micheál Donoghue, and this Galway team that's won the All-Ireland, Damien, they haven't been able to kind of put their foot down with Kilkenny, you know, that they haven't been able to kind of face them with the mental strength and the winning attitude, you know, that they've built up under Micheál Donoghue.
Yeah, well, they haven't played them, didn't play them last year.
Yeah.
They didn't, because Wexford tipped them, you know, so that's not Galway's fault either.
No.
They just didn't play them.
But, yeah.
You know, so, yeah, but I know, I understand the point you're saying. You're saying that Galway are All-Ireland champions and beat Kilkenny in championship hurling, which is fair enough. So, but I, as I said to you before, I think this is a very, very good Galway team. Now, saying that, I think Kilkenny have improved immensely since last year, and they're league champions, and they always take the league very, very serious, and they've got new players. They've blooded new players, they've found new players, and now they're getting back some of their older players. So they are, you know. And the likes of Colin Finlay, who's only back from army duty, who's, after coming back in massive condition, the size of him is unbelievable. And like, every one of these games are going to bring them on an awful lot. So it's going to be an interesting game in Pearse Stadium. There's going to be an absolutely massive crowd, it's going to be a massive occasion. It's Galway's first game in Pearse Stadium in the Leinster Hurling Championship, which is something that Galway were looking for a long, long time, and they've got it. So they have, and now their first game is bringing Kilkenny, where they would love to be Kilkenny in the Leinster Championship down in Salthill. Brian Coley's going to go down, he's going to prepare his team very well, all the usual, and have the boys well up for it. But it's going to be an interesting game. So the likes of the one thing I'm interested to see, Colm, is Walter Walsh didn't play the last day, so he didn't against Offaly, he was injured, you know. So the big thing it will be interesting to see. Now, we don't know what he was, just even JJ couldn't tell us what was wrong with him, but he's a big player for Kilkenny, right? And he's becoming a massive leader. Will they, if he has a niggle or if he's injured, will they chance him next day? That's the big thing for me. And for example, if they don't try him the next day, will they throw Colin Findlay in to get game time? It's game time in the tick of championship action, probably going in there full forward on Doughty Burke to get him. Because realistically, am I right by saying this, that Kilkenny, you know, could maybe not show their full hand, just for example, not show their full hand and go to Pearse Stadium, right, which I'm not suggesting that they would, but go to Pearse Stadium and lose, right, they can still potentially get into the Leinster final and play Galway again in Crow Park, right, which would be a dodgy game to play, right, but to Crow Park and play Galway with their full strength hand and then go at them hammers and tongs in Crow Park and win a Leinster final.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'm interested to see what type of maybe game plan will there be, any, you know, will Brian Coley maybe use this game to maybe give some of the players that hadn't got a lot of game time, i.e. Finlay and their cornerback
Murphy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, just extra time to see. But I expect Galway to put in a big game at home, a huge performance at home in Galway.
Yeah, I don't think that's in Brian Cody's kind of makeup to go and not try to win the game or show his full hand.
I'm wondering will he chance, but I'm just wondering. For example, if the likes of the Walter Brooks are carrying, or not Walter Brooks,
Wally Walsh is
carrying any little niggly injuries, will he chance any of these players?
Yeah, no, I know the point you're trying to make.
Yeah, I don't think he will.
Yeah, the point I was trying to make to Damien there was, since the last time the two teams have played, the teams have been on different trajectories. That's probably what I'm trying to say. And like, I mean, psychologically for Galway, they're in a great chance to banish maybe this baggage they have with Kilkenny.
I think because they're on different trajectories, it's just to do with the, I suppose, where the teams are at this particular time. I mean, that was an old Kilkenny team. I won't say it was old, but there was a lot of senior players that were just retiring at the one time, and it just so happens that obviously you've got to change your team. The Galway team is together now, it's about 4 or 5 years, I think, and you know, it's obviously built up a lot of experience, and it's in the position now that Kilkenny probably were in 5 or 6 years ago in terms of the level of experience, and you know, they're just very, very comfortable in the way they're playing at the minute. I think Galway should take a massive amount of confidence from being All-Ireland champions. That just happened to you, and you know, you build in self-belief and the little things you wondered after you have won. And again, Damien will have certainly more experience in this, but when, you know, when you win something like that, you get a lot of self-belief about you, and that looks like the way Galway are playing at the minute. They have a settled team, they have scoring forwards obviously, but I think the thing that's really important here is what Damien has referred to. You know, Galway for a number of years now been crying about playing games at home in the Leinster Championships and wanting the likes of Kilkenny going into Salt Hill and to have this opportunity on Sunday, and I think they will see Kilkenny as a real challenge here, and I think, you know, Galway will not have a lazy performance on Sunday, or you know, a sort of a medium performance. I think they'll be really, really going for this, but I think Kilkenny will be as well. I think you know, first of all, I agree with you. Brian Cody rarely does this, puts out of a sort of a shadow team. I don't think I've ever seen him do that. And you know, it's a very, very dangerous thing to do, and even more risky to do with a young team, because the message that he's given is the message that you're giving your players is critical in all of these instances. And if you're saying to the likes of Keown and some of these players that, you know, you keep pushing hard here and you'll hold on to a Kilkenny jersey here regardless of who's coming back on the team, well, you can't mess that around by giving a mixed signal next Sunday against a team like Galway in Salt Hill. And I think, you know, Brian has never deviated from that. What he says is what he believes in, and what he tells the players is exactly what he expects, and there's no mess, and nobody is under any ambiguity about what's at issue here. So I think both teams will go hell for leather on Sunday. I think it's going to be a cracking game, and I do expect Galway on their own pitch to be really, really up for this. They have a break leading into it, in the sense that they have a good game against Offaly. I know Kilkenny have had two wins already, but they've been a little bit tight, and you know, I just think that Galway will have just too much class, and you know, even though hunger doesn't win your matches, but in this instance it'll certainly stop Galway just from being, you know, going through a lazy performance or something like that. And I do expect Galway to win the game.
Yeah, okay. Two things tactically that I wanted to run past the two of you, and we'll move on then. Is Damien, I'll start with you. Like, I mean, we know both of these teams, they play orthodox to the extent that they don't play sweepers. We know they'll have their own kind of game plans and tactics, and that can be up front. But we saw what Joy Dublin got from Manmark and TJ Reid. We saw what Joy Wexford have got by Manmark and TJ Reid. Like, I mean, is it out of the question that Galway put a corner back on TJ Reid, or is that messing up their own team with McInerney being such a great centre back?
No, Micheál Ryan will pick his team. So he will, Micheál will pick his team, simple as that. And as you remember last year when Galway played Tipperary in the All-Ireland semi final, every man had a man marking job, and there were certain players that had jobs to do marking certain Tipperary forwards, and it didn't matter what position he went to. And you take Dahi Burke, he marked Shamey Cannon, and Shamey Cannon went from 14 and he went out to 11 and he went across to 15, and Dahi Burke marked him, and as simple as that. And that's what you'll find.
Right.
I expect McInerney to be centre back, and if he's given the role to man mark TJ Reid, if TJ goes out to wing forward, he will go out to wing back and mark him. Now, I don't think he'll go to midfield, for example. He stayed in centre back, and it's a midfielder chopped in to mark him. But yeah, Micheál Dunne will line up his players to man mark certain Kilkenny forwards, and they will be given the job, and that's it. And there'll be, but there'll be no cornerback coming out to centre back position or anything like that. But I will tell you what positioning and what role I'm really looking forward to, we'll say, on a 1-to-1 is I'm looking forward to the challenge to see how Joe Cannon and Killian Buckley line up. That is one I'm really going to be interested in. I'm interested to see, will the likes of Killian push up on top of Joe and mark him tight, or will he kind of do what he's doing, hovering around, getting onto breaks, sweeping ball and sweeping ball up the field, where Joe can often hover from 11 out into midfield, get onto the short pass, the stick pass, and drive it over the bar from 60, 70, 80 yards. So I'm really interested to see how that duo pan out, Killian Buckley versus Joe Cannon, that role. Just what way will Kilkenny play it?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one as well. Just to go back onto the Galway defenders and this man-marking thing, Cheddar, because that man-marking thing obviously has pros and cons. I love pairing your defenders off with the forward that suits them physically and, you know, speed-wise and all these things. If one player can get in another player's head, and if they can, you follow them everywhere. But you really need versatile defenders then, obviously, to do that, you know, because McInerney might not be comfortable on the wing. He probably is. Dotty Burke, geez, you'd rather him on the edge of the square than being dragged out to the cornerback. If I was the opposing manager and I saw Dotty Burke was following my man everywhere, I'd tell him to stand in the corner and take Dotty Burke completely out of the edge of the square.
And look, you would do a huge amount of looking at the matchups. And I know, I think Damien is right. I think Galway at the minute have all the right matchups in their natural positions. You don't have to change a whole lot here. But you certainly will not move one of your defenders into a position where he's very uncomfortable in playing, regardless of if he's a good man marker or not. So you'll be looking at a lot of things. You'd have sort of general rules along those things. But you simply cannot leave game breaker players on the other side dominating matches. And you know, Damien, you know, draws a good example there of what Kilkenny will do on Joe Canning. There is no way you're going to leave Joe Canning, you know, run around the middle third of the field when he's scoring ranges from his own half back line up to the end line.
Yeah.
So look, there'll be something to be done with that, and it may not be really visible to you. You know, they may give a midfielder two jobs to do in terms of playing on two men, but they definitely will not just disregard that.
But that's the only thing. Just on that, Cheddar, sorry to cut you off. That's the only thing you can do with Joe Canning, because if you follow him, David Burke's breaking down that middle, and that's why he'll see that whole thing open, and who'll look for him? Joe. And Joe looks for David Burke on that kind of, you know, when he attacks all the time. So Killian Buckley really can't follow Joe the way Galway's midfield plays.
Well, I don't think he can follow anyway, will he? You simply kind of take your centre back out of the centre back position and leave a massive hole down the middle. You cannot do that, but you'll be thinking of different little ways of doing that. But I think that's what Galway have really brought to their team now. I think they set themselves up conventionally to an extent, but the interchangeability of their players in the forward positions, even on separate plays, sometimes is you know, a little bit spellbinding, and sometimes, you know, backs can be in sort of, you know, like rabbits in lights, wondering who am I marking here because of the interchange. And these are all real score getters. It's not that you have three or four workhorses and two score getters.
Yeah.
You give any of these Galway players the ball, including two or three subs that'll come on the field, and they will hurt you from anywhere, from distance or close in. And they've shown recently against Offaly that they've a bit of an eye for you know, tearing in and shooting goals and that as well. So I think, you know, I'm really interested to look at, and they're the things I always look at matches. How is the team being set up? Defensively, how are they setting up? Are they going to take on the game players on the other side? And that's that raises another interesting point here, and going back to the point, Willie, that you made and that Damien made in that All-Ireland in the second half. I stand corrected on this, but I think Henry Shefflin took that game by the scruff of the neck, made his own change out the centre forward, and dictated the way the game was going to be played from there on in. And more than any other move, and probably more than any other move I've seen in a long number of years, that move probably changed the course of the game. And there's an interesting sort of difference here, because I don't see TJ having that type of game management role in the Kilkenny team. Most of the stuff he does is technically brilliant, and he leads the game by the way he plays, rather than the way he directs the play around him. And I think, you know, Henry was, I just thought he was fantastic at that, that, you know, he always was able to spot and fix things on the field, and that level of leadership on the field is just invaluable to you.
I think that was 2012, was it, Damien, the one Henry,
yeah.
Am I getting
yeah.
that wrong? Yeah, that was 12.
Yeah, I know you're 2012, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just to finish up, lads, we'll get... It's the Pádraig Walsh thing. That was the last one I wanted to talk about. So Pádraig Walsh obviously had all that trouble with Liam Rush in the Dublin game, and then Joe Bergen hit him for 1-3. Joe Bergen would be of a similar big man kind of in at full forward. Is this a weakness here? Like, Conor Cooney is a big man. Is this something Galway need to be looking at, Cheddar? I know we've talked about this on the podcast before. He said Pádraig Walsh is very good in the air, but is he good in the air on a fella his own size? Is this something that could be an issue for Kilkenny, that he might struggle with someone who's a big physical full forward?
Well, I suppose he has struggled. You know, there are the facts. He has struggled on two, you know, very strong, robust type players. But I think Conor Cooney is a different type of player, even though he's a big man. But he doesn't play as aggressively or as physically, I suppose, as Liam Rush. And maybe to a lesser extent, he's just a more skillful player. And Damien can correct me here, but I would have always seen him as a very technically brilliant hurler who depends a lot on his pace and skill and his hurling vision and that to really do it for him. So I think he's a different player. Nonetheless, he's a fantastic player. And
he's a big unit, though, Conor.
Massive, he really is, and look around the Galway forward line, you know. So who do you pick for a small unit?
Well, that's true, Damien. Well, maybe now that
by the way, now that Damien has retired here,
well, Brian Kilcannon is a small unit there, Damien. How good is he? He's 2-1 against Offaly. Now I know they scored 5-18, so that has to be put into that context. But are we looking at Brian Kilcannon as a new little wispy Damien Hayes?
No, Carm, I explained to you last year, I wouldn't make that Galway team, so I wouldn't. I'm too small. I was too small to, what you call it, that Galway are looking for kind of bigger, stronger men now, so they are. So maybe, thankfully, that this new era came when I was gone. Brian Kilcannon, what's happened there is, Micheál Dunne was just trying to find one or two players every year. And he'd be a very fast nippy hurler, that Brian Kilcannon. He's from Clymer Daly. He's a very, very good club hurler, so he was under 21 hurler last year, so he was. So, and what he's doing, he's giving him his chance, you know. And it was a good game to start off for him. Yeah. Was against Offaly, you know. And but will he be on the first 15 or anything like that, as I call it, at business end of season? I don't think he will, right? Okay, but yeah, he'll be an option. So he will, because as Cheddar says, they have two or three other options in the forward line that we know of, that came in last year's All Ireland final and made a difference.
Okay.
Being honest, in winning the All Ireland. But yeah, he's a good young player. He's going to blood him bit by bit. Technically good hurler, good skill level, everything. But and he could start the weekend. I don't honestly know the team and all that, but I wouldn't see him being a first 15 player when it comes business in the season.
Right, okay. So lads, are we all going for Galway here? Do we have to give the predictions? We're all going for a close enough game, but a Galway win.
Yeah, I'd agree with that anyway.
Yeah.
I just think Galway is just too much class at the minute. But on the other side of that, you know, Kilkenny and Brian will love to go to Sol Hill and prove everybody wrong here. You know, so I think it will be close, but it's just in Galway have too much. And I think the hunger that they need to show to prove that they needed these games in Sol Hill and in Galway over the last couple of years, they need to show that on Sunday.
Yeah, Damien, you're
the home venue is going to be a massive team playing in Pearse Stadium, and plus, as Cheddar said there, Galway are long enough there looking for games to be played in Galway, and they've got their chance now, and who bigger to hammer it home now with Galway or with Kilkenny the next day. So I expect Galway to beat Kilkenny in Pearse Stadium.
Okay, so Clare Waterford, lads, in Cusick Park at 3:30, and this is on Sunday. And the big news coming out of this one, lads, is Austin Gleeson is out and Pádraig Mahony's out. So we already know that Shane Bennett's out. So, like, I mean, Waterford look like they're missing their three first choice. Well, their three best forwards based on last year's championship, you'd say. Mm-hmm. Shane Bennett is their only man to play in the full forward line, and he's a great engine, and he runs and he harries and he works, and he's a great man running at players. And then you have Gleeson and O'Mahony last year, who are their two best half forwards and score getters. So Jesus, Cheddar, like, I mean, do Waterford need to take a whole new look at the way they're playing, how important these two fellas are within their system? And when you look at fellas now that are probably going to start, like Maurice Sheridan, Devine, you're going to have Curran in the full forward line. None of them really want to do that kind of Shane Bennett, you know, kind of role. You maybe have Stephen Bennett, doesn't really want to probably do that either. So do Waterford need to go back to the drawing board and even their whole system based on these three fellas being out?
Well, look, they kind of go back and change, you know, the key points of the way they play. And in any event, when you're missing some players up front, you know, their normal setup now of playing with a sweeper would actually suit that anyway. Stay in the game for as long as you can. You're missing a couple of players, build confidence in the team and go for it. But these are massive losses to a team. And, you know, it's been very, very difficult for Derek. And it would be difficult enough for that game to be played in Welsh Park, but it's actually in Ennis. Mm. And it would be even less difficult if Clare hadn't had a good game last weekend and been pipped at the post as such by Cork, even though Cork deserved to win the game. But look, Clare are going to go into Ennis in their home ground on Sunday for the same reasons Damien is talking about Galway, and this is a win, must win game for Clare. And you know, Waterford going in there missing, you know, two or three marquee players for them is very, very difficult start for them. And bear in mind, it doesn't get any easier for them because all their other matches are, they've no home matches and that either. So I think that just has to tilt it in Clare's favour. But look, I was a little bit worried about, I just thought Clare played hurling in Cork last Sunday rather than going to win a match. And you know, give a lot of space to, you give space to some of these Cork forwards, they will destroy you. There's going to be, you know, a lot of discussion about this at the end of the year in terms of the change in style of Clare in the current management versus the Davy management. And a lot of people would say, well, look, we'd rather see this type of hurling. But you know, would Clare be better served by a tight defence, not giving anything away, and sneaking enough scores at the other side? To actually go win matches? I think they probably would have won the match last Sunday against Cork if they had adapted like that. So I think it's difficult for Waterford. I think you have got to give it Clare because it's in Ennis, and you've got to give it to them because you'll expect them to really, really react to the defeat last Sunday and go for the win here.
What do you think, Damien? Like, I mean, I'd nearly say if Clare can't beat Waterford without these Clares, I'm banning any Clare analysis in future on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm always saying when I heard that Austin Gleeson and Borg Mahan are injured, I guess I'm wondering, is this a bogey now? Is this telling the truth to the media? You know, and if it is the truth, these two boys are injured, these are absolutely massive losses. You know, the Waterford camp and the Waterford setup have had a tough enough this year already, so they have, because they've struggled during the league and they've been relegated, and now they're going into the championship first round against Clare, down in Clare, and now they're going to be missing their two top forwards, and Austin Gleeson is a former hurler of the year, and Pádraig Mahoney has been an absolutely brilliant player, so he has for Waterford over the last 2 years, and he's also their marquee free taker.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be very, very difficult for Waterford down here. I've been asked if these two players are injured that they say they are, and they're injured as bad that they're completely out of it. You know, so I can see nothing, only a clear win here. They need to win. They really, really need to win. They need to up it. It's a home game again. It's down here in Innes. They could have beaten Cork the other day. I think myself that they just need to do a couple of things I think they need to start taking points. I said that the other day in the podcast, and I also think that they need to get Tony Kelly on the ball an awful lot more than they are. And what I would do is, you know, for example, I would take Tony Kelly out of that midfield role. I would put in an ordinary midfielder that can hold the middle, hold the centre, that would pack up the defence, the Cheddar is all the time, and give Tony a role in the forward line, maybe corner forward, full forward, centre forward, where he can roam around all six positions and get on to ball. Simple as that. And they need to get him on the ball, Clare do, in my opinion, if they're going to have a big summer.
Well, is
but
that,
the Clare have to win this game. This is Clare's biggest game. And they need to drive home advantage, especially with Waterford not having their strongest team out like that. And you're on about what way will Waterford play. Maybe Waterford, because they're down so many numbers, maybe Waterford will just go to Orsock 15 and just go for it.
Yeah.
And see what happens, and maybe go back to their reverted game plan maybe for the next game if the lads are back or whatever. But Clare have to, the thing is, Clare have to win this game, simple as that.
Is Clare's defence suffering from Tony Kelly and Colm Galvin being in midfield? And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because the two players they're so attacky minded.
Yeah. They scored, you know, 1-6 against Cork. The two of them.
Which was brilliant scoring, right? But they're so attacking minded. So usually the way it used to go with midfielders was one went forward and one stepped back. You know, that was the kind of, one was a more defensive midfielder and the other one was more attacking. And I just find, like, Tony, particularly his last day, he scored 1-3 last day, 1-2 from play and one massive long-range free, right? But he made how many ghosty runs into the
full forward line trying to latch onto a ball, and that saps your energy. But that meant then he'd run back out to midfield, which meant, you know, Cork were able to put balls out maybe into Cork players, were able to run onto the ball where your midfielder wasn't there where he should be. So yeah, I think sometimes the Clare do suffer from having two very energetic players that want to go so far getting scores. So but that's Clare's team. That's the way they've picked. They know better than we do. But I would think Tony would be better in the forward line and tell him to roam around roam around the six forwards and see what they can do and what they can't do.
And that's it, Cheddar. Like, it's as old as the hills, as old as I'm playing football, and I'm sure it's the same as hurling, is you'll have an attacking midfielder and a defensive midfielder. Usually you don't have two fellas that are brilliant in attack, and if you're that desperate to get forward, you absolutely don't have the energy to carry out the doubling up and the covering space when you get back out into your position.
You can't have it, but you can have something else. I wouldn't have a difficulty with playing the two lads in the middle of the field, provided that you have some defensive screen in place to be able to drop back, even when the ball's in the air, to be able to provide more bodies in the defence, to block up space, to be double markers, to win possession, to work the ball through the lines again, to give the precision passing to quality forwards inside. I'd be, you know, obviously what Damien is saying would be very, very interesting, but I think what is an issue here really may very well be that the two lads have been massively successful at under 21 level management, but what goes on at senior level and at under 21s is a different as chalk and cheese. And I think playing in a conventional team as Clare are at the minute, maybe even going back more conventional than we even recognise in terms of having two big central defenders and big central attackers and that as well, and working off of those attackers, there's not too many teams doing it at the minute. And I think for Clare to win in All-Ireland, definitely they're going to have to change something here to be successful. I think they'll have enough to win on Sunday, but I think they certainly need to look at the defensive screen, because there's a lot of counties out there with equally quality forwards that Cork have last Sunday, and you give Conor Coney or Joe or any of these space in the Galway or any of these teams or even Tipperary given that type of space, and they will hurt you every single time. And Clare really need to look at that.
Right, just to finish up, Cheddar, what do you think of Damien's idea, which might have a bit of merit, that Waterford, because the hand that they're dealt and because maybe Morris, Shanahan and Devine and Curran aren't those type of players that maybe, you know, Shane Bennett and Jake Dillon are, that they might go a little bit more conventional in the full forward line and maybe, I don't know, try a different system until they get these lads back?
I'd be very, very surprised if they were to do that, right. Particularly with only a week to actually practice it. I think if you had 3 or 4 weeks to practice it, maybe. But bear in mind, Waterford did try that, was it earlier on the year or last year, was it against Cork, to try to go a little bit more traditional way
didn't
of playing.
Didn't work out too well.
Didn't work out for him. And look, this is all down to, there's a huge amount of science, obviously, to do with a whole lot of areas, not necessarily with sport, about behavioural change. So let's say a Waterford cornerback gets the ball at the minute, he knows who's coming off the shoulder, he can nearly read this. You take all of those, I suppose, supports out of that type of play, and you're going to confuse players and you're going to have breakdown, and in a big game like this away from home, the less change you can do in your team, the more comfortable they're going to be in terms of playing.
Yeah, okay, right, lads, we get quickly predictions on this in a word. Clare, we all going for Clare? Cheddar?
I think Damien put his finger on it there. If those two players are out, and I've no doubt, I think, considering the nature of the injuries and that, it looks like that they are, and as you say, Bennett's out as well, I think it has to be Clare. And if it isn't Clare, I think they're in serious trouble.
Yeah, I'd agree on that. Damien, same?
Yeah, Clare have to win this game, and Clare have to up it big time.
Okay.
And they need to start playing to the crowd, as in they need to get the crowd behind them and get the Clare roar behind the team, but Clare should be winning this game, full stop.
Okay, right, lads, we can't spend as much time on this because we're up to the hour here now, so we'll just get predictions on the next two. We'll do a bit of we did plenty on Tipperary, we'll do a bit on Cork in Wexford in the next two rounds, and Offaly as well. We'll start with Wexford and Offaly away in O'Connor Park, and Cheddar, obviously Offaly have been very competitive, haven't got it over the line, but you'd imagine they will be very competitive in this as well, but potentially not getting the win.
Yeah, this is a really, really risky one for Wexford. You know, obviously I've played in Tullamore already, and you know, there is a real rejuvenation in the team and a real spirit in the team under Kevin. And you know, they're definitely playing with spirit in their team. They probably have all the players back. I think I mentioned the last day that you know, I probably think that Offaly went with a very strong team against Galway and a very steady team, and I think they might, you know, that might evolve along the course of the championship here. They have certainly some young players and some quick forwards and clinical forwards come in there, including young, there's two Garrities and as mentioned before, Liam Langton, who's a very, very good prospect in Offaly. And there's a number of those coming through in Offaly that I think they might get a different mix in their team that could cause it difficult for Wexford. They won't fear Wexford. And I, you know, I think this will go down to the wire, to be honest with you. I do expect, because of the curve, I suppose, that Wexford are on at the minute, I would expect Wexford to come through with a couple of pints, but I think that's all that'll be in it.
Yeah, okay, Damien, do you fancy Wexford or Offaly?
I fancy Wexford. Because of what happened to them in the last 10 minutes of that Dublin game, that was a kick up the backside that Davy would have given them. So I expect Wexford to beat Offaly.
Okay, great stuff. So Tipperary Cork, lads, is the other one on RT on Sunday. That's at 2 o'clock. This is a huge game, but I thought Waterford were a bit more interesting to spend time on, lads, when they had the injuries, and it was more, there were more talking points around it. And again, we were talking about Tipperary a good bit at the top. So, like, I mean, how do you see this, lads? I think Cork are going to win this because the disarray. The fallout from Tip losses and the fallout from this one has been big, lads. And when you add up all that kind of stuff, it might seep into a panel, and Cork are a bloody good team that beat a much better Tipperary team last year. So I'm my predictions mean nothing on this podcast. I hold more sway on the football one, but I'm going for Cork here, Cheddar. What do you think?
Well, look, recent form, Woolley, would suggest that, yes. Look, I'll just comment on Tip a little bit first. They've poor form now. I mean, I saw them the semi-final against Limerick in the league, and I was very concerned about them then. Even more concerned having seen them in the league final. And look, their performance the last, they didn't change anything in this. And the sort of, I suppose, the lack of fight for the battle is deeply worrying about a Tipperary team. If that's any other county, I mightn't say that. And you'd have to ask, why is that? And the inconsistency in form from one year to the next and from one game to the next and all of those. But I think you've got to look at a couple of other little things as well. There's obviously reasons for all of these things. And you know, the team set up and how the team is set up, and the Tipperary game plan, I think, needs to be looked at. And, you know, there's been a lot of analysis done on that over the last couple of days on that. But I'll go back to another point, and I'm not defending Michael Ryan here in this point. I'm just merely pointing something out here. All along through the league, Michael made it clear to everybody that he was blooding some players here. And you cannot give mixed messages to the players. When you have a panel of 34 or 35 players, and you're going to say to them, okay, you know, we're down to performance here. You know, if you show performance in games, I'm going to pick you, and I'm going to keep picking you based on that performance. And he made those calls, and particularly after the league matches. Now, look, some of the positioning of those calls last Sunday, you know, may have been a little bit strange in the sense of you know, particularly their midfield pairing and full back pairing and that. But obviously, he was basing that on what they were, and his management team were basing that on what they saw on the training field. So if Seamus Callan and Brendan Maher and Bonner and all of those are fit to play and are properly fit to play next Sunday, their frame of mind going into this match is, you know, I've got to win back my jersey here. And, you know, from a very sort of dark situation, the potential for improvement in Tipperary, I think, is massive. And even if you look at a full forward line of Seamus Callan and Jason Ford and maybe the likes of Bubbles or John McGrath, you know, just going around outside of that two-man full forward line with somebody just buzzing around outside them, like, God, if you were a coach or a manager, you'd probably take two of your arms off just to have that potential. So the potential for improvement in Tipperary is massive. And I think if they did get this win, I'm very concerned, obviously, that there was such a small turnaround and the negativity and the energy sucking that's going on in Tipperary at the minute. I'd be very, very concerned about that if I was Michael. But if they got it right next Sunday and beat Cork in Thurles, I think he'd have a very strong hand and a very strong dressing room after that. But I think it is a big, big challenge, certainly for the next Sunday. And, you know, at the minute, considering, I suppose, the space that they gave Limerick forwards and that as well, and the lack of really, you know, the hip-to-hip traditional, I suppose, Tipperary method of marking players and that will give Cork too much space. Cork love coming to Thurles. I think they nearly prefer Thurles than going to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And I think, you know, they've won a match recently. They're very, very efficient forward line. They have a lot of energy in their team at the minute. They have a bit of panel depth as well. And, you know, I expect Cork to win this by a couple of points. But if Tip turn this around on Sunday, I think they'll be in a great position then to have a right go off the All-Ireland.
Isn't that what it comes down to on this one, Damien, that Tipperary's backs are to the wall so much that one win could turn their whole season around, but you could easily see that win not coming and then their Munster final hopes are gone?
Yeah, no, it's only one game they can turn around the season, and I'm not going to talk about Cork, Colm, I'm going to talk about Tipperary. If there's anything in these Tipperary players, and I mean anything in them, it has to come out of them next Sunday. And they're at home in Turles, they're a wounded animal, right? They know they need to perform, they know they underperformed, they know they're better than they are, they know that they're under pressure, they know that they have to give more, they know that they could have won the All-Ireland last year, they know they won the All-Ireland the previous year, they've dropped their standards, so it's now it's time for them to look at each other and get more out of them. The lads have to step up in that Tipperary team, and I like an awful lot of Tipperary hurlers. I just as a neutral, I like them, but we need to see more of an awful lot of them. Like Noel McGrath, John McGrath, there's more in them and they can give it. You take Jason Ford, unbelievable league campaign, you know, by his own standards, first game out in the championship he was only average again, right? We say James Barry's in there, they've mixed up, we have to get more out of the Paul Igmar and Ronemar. This team can produce a performance, but they need to produce it themselves. They need to look at themselves and they need to look inside themselves. And they need to produce a big performance for the Tipperary and the Tipperary hurling supporters and for the management team. And if it doesn't come out of them, if it does not come out of them next Sunday, then that Tipperary team potentially is finished. It's as simple as that. And I'm going to say the Tipperary are going to have, there's going to be a massive backlash in this team, and that's why I'm back in Tipperary to win this game. I expect a massive performance out of Tipperary, a professional performance, and one that they're well capable of giving, and they are better than Cork on their day, but they need to put the shoulder to the wheel and they just need to go back to brass tacks. And when I say brass tacks, they all need to start working harder up front, hooking and blocking and getting onto breaks and all that sort of stuff. But I expect Tipperary to put in a massive performance on Sunday.
Yeah, I think the last point Damien made there is really, really important. I mean, the level of intensity that you see Tipperary playing at is surprising for a team that has won in All-Ireland and that have got so much technical ability within the panel. I think they need to look at a little more than that. I think they've got to look at the way they're playing. And I've commented on this a couple of times. I think they rely on their technical ability, individual technical ability, just to dig them out of the hole and take the score. And they rely a little bit as well on just a simple diagonal crossfield ball off a half back in front of a corner forward and that. And like, I just think their hurling needs to be much more sophisticated than that. And I think if they did, they would be unbeatable. I just think there's so much room for improvement in that team.
Just Cheddar to cut you off. Like, I mean, lack of work rate is a worrying sign in a team. Do you know what I mean? Like, lack of work rate in a championship match. Like, I mean, that's a prerequisite for a championship. In Munster hurling, like, I mean, is it a worrying sign when you see players that have shown work rate before not showing work rate?
It's a really, really worrying. I mean, I've said this a number of times over the last couple of matches. The lack of fight for battle in a Tipperary hurler at the minute is very surprising to me, having looked at him for a long number of years, being the exact opposite. And their foundations, you can lay all the game plans you like and all of the fancy stuff and PowerPoint presentations and mobility and forwards and all of that. If the fight's not in the person to really make this happen, well, all the other stuff follows from that. This is first for Tipperary, and it just doesn't seem to be there. And I think that's what really needs to be figured out by Michael and the management team. You know, why is this just passive hurling, I would call it, happening to Tipperary when they have such ability to play a completely different game? But I do think they do need to change their method of hurling as well and become a little bit more, they're just easier to figure out to play against at the minute. And I think they need to change their style in hurling and their mobility in the forward line, their movement, their interchange of forwards, and that needs to be an awful lot better. But my God, have they got the type of player to actually do that?
Yeah, okay, brilliant, lads. So Damien's going for Tip and myself and Cheddar are going for Cork. So listen, we'll see how that goes. We'll be back on Monday. JJ and Michael Carton will be here for that. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.